and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Ekton, and with me as always is Leo San. Leo, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It's almost the holiday season. There's that meme going around. It's time for the let's circle back after the holidays time and work. But I'm excited, though, just personally. I'm going to be going on a trip with my wife. We'll be going on about a week-long trip south of the border. It'll be my first time. And the first thing I thought about when she told me we were going to be going was, are the Mexico City Capitans going to be playing the Iowa Wolves? And unfortunately, they will not be playing them there. So they actually won't even be playing a home game that whole week I'm there. I think they're having their NBA G League's winter showcase going on. So I think they'll all be in Vegas or some type of location there. But I'm excited about it. So I'm going to get out of the country for a little bit. But yeah, I'm excited to be here. How about you, Ryan? How are you doing?
Yeah, the Mexico Heat from here in Minneapolis sounds pretty nice. But if you went to a G League game on a trip to Mexico, you'd have to be a real basketball sicko to take time out of your schedule to go to a G League game.
Yeah, I just really want to see how Juan Toscano-Anderson's really developing down there in his fifth year in the league. So,
yeah, I would sit on the beach instead, have a cocktail or something.
Hey, you know what? We're trying to grow the game, Ryan. We're trying to grow the game.
Exactly. Well, we'll just hop right into it. Topic number one, howl or foul. The Wolves shot 40% from the field in two straight games, under that number, really. Howl or foul on the Wolves' offensive issues being about shooting variance more than anything else?
Yeah, the 40% has been pretty evident. If you've watched any of these last two games, it's been looking a little bit shoddy out there. But I'm going to say foul that I don't think that's more than the shooting variance. Now, obviously, I understand that there's some foundational issues when you're watching Julius Randle just being up against Rui Hachimura or any other mismatch that he gets against the Lakers. It doesn't look great. Think about what's the cap with that offense. But I think it's graded out, I think, just where you thought they would be early in the season. I think that, yes, they're a little bit lower than expected. But I feel like part of the reason is that not just necessarily the shooting variance, but their three-point attempts, the volume has dipped considerably. I was digging into some of the numbers. That first 14 games stretch of the Timberwolves season this year, they were fifth in three-point attempts. And they were sixth in three-point percentage. At that point, they were good for eighth in offensive rating with a 114.5. So they were top five in attempts and top six in percentages made. Now, in these most previous 11 games, the next 11 games, they went down to 14th in three-point attempts. So they dipped nine spots, and also their three-point percentage also went down as well, too, by 13 spots. They're down to 19th. So their offensive rating in the last 11 games has fallen all the way down to 27th. So I think that's a huge enough gap for me to feel like, okay, the shooting variance, not only the variance, but the volume is a huge deal in it. I mean, even think about this week. I dug into the last two games that they had as well, too. NBA.com has some great tracking information where they can tell you some stats on teams and how many shots they took from where and how guarded they were. And on open threes, they got 31 open threes between the Lakers and Spurs games. Out of those 31 open threes, they made them at 38.7%. Respectable. Good for ninth in the league during that time, there during that week stretch. Now, that's on open attempts. So that means that there was a defender. Closest defender was within about 6 feet. Now, they had 28 wide open attempts. So 28 wide open attempts means that wide open, they're not within 6 feet. So 28 wide open attempts, and they made only 32% of them. So I do think that's a huge enough number to really correlate about why their offensive rating has fell down so low and scored less than, you know, however many points, you know, 40% from the field, is because the shooting has gone down. So I do think that that's the main issue there, though I can understand why there could be other issues.
Yeah, I agree with you that, like, the shooting, just the poor shooting is, like, a big part of it. Like, Nas should shoot at a better rate than he has. Dante should shoot at a better rate than he has. Mike is starting to heat up, but he had a slow start to the season. But everyone other than that, I would say, is kind of hovering around where you'd expect them to. Nikhil is probably the one example of someone that's shooting above of what their expectations were. But I'm going to say how on the offensive issues being more than just shooting variance. So I do think it's more than just shooting variance. The ball movement hasn't been there the past couple games. The turnovers have been an issue. And it just kind of a lot of the teams are starting to, like, pack the paint and do what they did last year, where they would just not let Anthony Edwards do anything and just play every single gap for him and bring two to the ball at all times, make Ant give it up. And so, like, that type of stuff is, like, it's not just about, like, missing open shots. They like, Ant needs to do better getting off the ball or finding space in the lane when it's there. Other players need to do a better job creating. So I think it's more than just shooting variance, but I do wonder, like you mentioned, the three-point volume falling down in the past. How much of that is teams taking it away? How much of that is them feeling like they don't want to take shots because they're not going in? Or what's really going into that? Like Julius Randle, I think, has not been able to quite find like the kick-out passes that he was early in the year. And that's probably due to a bunch of factors, not just on him. But yeah, I do think that like if they do get their shooting numbers up, like they can jump a few spots. They're currently 19th in offense, two spots lower than last year, which ultimately, if they want to win a title, which seems like a high bar at this point, but that's what the goal was at the beginning of the season, they're going to need to get like probably into the top 10. And to me, turning around shooting isn't going to be the only thing that's going to have to change.
Yeah, I can agree with you on some of that. I mean, the eye test definitely seems to show that, yeah, they're missing shots, but yeah, maybe they're not generating a great, and teams are adapting, like you said, those Julius Randle late, you know, double clutch in the air and then fire out like a pass last second. You know, he throws like these 100-mile fastballs at his teammates sometimes that, yeah, I think teams are really learning, okay, well, that's what they're going to go to, and, you know, they're kind of living and dying with it. And the defense, obviously, we'll get into later, but the defense has been holding them up. But the offense, yeah, you know, there's, I think there's still plenty of meat on the bone, though, that, you know, yes, the shooting increasing will, I think, be the primary reason. But I think that, you know, learning how to maximize, you know, by lengthening the rotation, right? Trying to get Rob in there. I mean, we're seeing some good moments from Rob out there. Having a point guard, I think we got a double point guard look at some point in that last game against the Spurs where Conley and Rob were back out there on the ground, on the floor. Sample size is super small, and we'll see. Again, I'm not saying that Rob Dillingham will be the reason that the offense will pick up, but I definitely think he will help once he gets more in there and we're not running out Nikhil and Dante as the primary ball handler and turning the ball over a ton, because that is one of the huge issues for why the offense has been so terrible, is that they've been turning ball over a huge amount of time. I think they're 27th, I believe, in the league in like turnover percentage or some crazy. They're in the 20s for sure, so it's not good. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of areas that they can improve in the, around the margins. So we joked about it in a couple of shows now, but I'm about to owe Ryan two beers if the Wolves don't get up to top 10 in offensive rating. So, you know, I'm kind of praying and trying to project good vibes out there for their offense.
Yeah, I agree. And I wonder if, as the defense continues to be as good as it was last year in this reach and stretch, if they kind of shift, like early in the year when they were struggling on defense, they couldn't play Rob because some of his defensive limitations were clearly like they weren't able to hide him like they expected they would be able to. But now that they are playing defense like they expect to do, can they increase Rob's minutes to get him some more action and not sacrifice a little on the defensive end, but not have it be as big of an issue? I mean, that was their what they said in the preseason, like they were going to sacrifice a little defense to try to increase the offense. So I'd like to see that. I mean, it's going to be like a season long. No one's getting hurt, which is great, but it almost feels like,
hey man, like, don't count out Joe Ingles. All right, Joe, yeah, Ingles been hurt.
Dude is just like drinking whatever he's drinking on the sideline, having a great time. Yeah, I just wonder if, like, you obviously hope and pray for an injury, but maybe someone missing two games gives, like, Dillingham or Minot some more run and that figures something out. But because, like, it's just hard to get, like, a rhythm when you're playing, like, 3-4 minute stretches. But ultimately, I just don't know where the minutes are coming from, because I would say Nikhil probably needs more minutes. Dante probably feels like he needs longer stretches, more minutes, and like your starters are all very good that have played really well. So I don't know what the solution is there, but I would like to see kind of Dillingham used more often to try to boost the offense.
How about this, Ryan? We're all about good energy here today, all right? This is going to be a good energy pod. And we're going to say that Mike Conley is going to be having his, what? Let's just say, what is this, third child or something, all right? He's going to miss a couple games. He's going to let Rob start. He's going to get a couple more minutes. Everyone's going to be perfectly healthy. Mike's going to get some well-deserved time off with his family, let his body recuperate. And then by the time he comes back, his student and Rob will be ready to play a couple more minutes. So let's maybe put that energy out there. So no injuries, but maybe a little break for one of the guys.
Yeah, that scenario is certainly better than an injury. But we can move on to topic two, which is Jaden McDaniels has been fantastic this last week. Interestingly enough, just kind of like we did a pod a week ago, and they've only played two games since, and they still don't play for another 3 days here. So it's just because of the NBA Cup, it's a weird schedule where there's just a ton of time off. But in the two games they've had during this weird stretch, Jaden McDaniels has averaged 15 points on 52.4% shooting and has had 10 rebounds and 4.5 steals, which are always interesting numbers for Jaden, just because you probably always want to see those numbers as high as possible. So Leo, Howell or foul on Jaden McDaniels has turned a corner this season?
I'm going Howl on this one. I am howling at Jaden McDaniels turning a corner, baby. We've all been waiting for it for years now, it seems like. And I think he has turned a corner that can be sustainable. Now, will he average 10 rebounds a night? I think if he averages 10 rebounds a night for the rest of the season, the Timberwolves probably will never lose a game ever again, okay? But if he doesn't average those numbers, I think that's okay, because the main difference what we're seeing with Jaden out there is energy. He's playing with a ton of energy out there. He's really hustling, making those small plays. He's getting after it. He's being aggressive on offense, and that's sustainable. It doesn't matter what the box score shows. As long as he be sustainable, it doesn't matter if he's getting 4.5 steals a game. It doesn't matter if he's shooting over that 56% or 54%, whatever it was. But, you know, there seems to be like there's some breakthrough mentally for him. And that's always kind of the big thing with Jaden. You know, it's cliche, but I do feel like some of the things that does hold Jaden back the most is himself. Right, getting a little bit too emotional in a game when he gets in foul trouble, and he starts pressing when he's not hitting his shots or whatever, but he seems to feel a little bit more at ease. And I think that's honestly something that could have been predicted, is that it was going to take him time to get used to the lineup and get used to the new personnel and his new role. Now there's a lot more opportunities for him to really kind of find a new way in, and so I think he's been doing that. So as you mentioned earlier about how there's been such sparing amount of games throughout the past week or two, but now, to be honest, we should probably be kind of happy that, yes, maybe there's not a ton of games, but we're talking about wins. Imagine if we had lost a couple more of these games and then we're sitting here for a week or two saying the season's over, Jaden McDaniels is overpaid, but instead we can talk about how great he is and the potential that he still has that he's just barely scratching the surface of. So how about you, Ryan? How or foul on Jaden McDaniels turning a corner?
Yeah, I'm going to say how. I think this is the Jaden McDaniels. Maybe not as much offensively, maybe not 15 points a game, but this is the Jaden McDaniels we should expect to get the rest of the season. His defensive intensity is like clearly back. That's something that was kind of up and down to start the year, and that's clearly been back. One interesting thing about like the last two matchups is he's been not been guarding like the primary offensive player on the other team, and he's been able to been like off ball and been the low man. That always helps with foul trouble, but there's been no foul trouble as of late. And I think like to the steals and the rebounds, to me that's such a big like part of it. Like a lot of the reason, I mean, you could always say Jaden can rebound better, but like a lot of the reason he doesn't get a lot of rebounds is he's guarding the perimeter player, then he's up by the 3-point line when the rebound comes out. So, and that probably goes for steals too, where I'm sure he gets plenty of pickpocket steals, but like most steals in the NBA come off of deflected passes and off ball steals like that. So I do think if they can try to get him more off ball, that should be it'll be easier to do against like San Antonio and the Lakers are easy matchups to do that in when LeBron's out, because they don't have that perimeter creator to put Jaden on. I mean, they have D'Lo, we'll talk about. I don't think you have to worry about that. But even if they do have a perimeter creator, like thinking about like maybe Sacramento, when like Nikhil and Jaden share the floor, maybe you put Nikhil on someone like Fox and you have Jaden roam and play that role a little bit more. I just think that's like a good wrinkle to throw in to a defense, but probably ultimately like game on the line, last whatever seconds, you're going to put Jaden on the primary defender.
Yeah, he had so many big moments in the Lakers game and the Spurs game. When you look at the box score, if you missed a game, you're like, oh, it seems like a pretty easy win. But, you know, there were some parts where it got a little bit rickety. And Jaden just, I'm looking at my game notes here. I just have this huge, like, a huge block in the fourth quarter when he went up and just smacked it off the backboard. He was doing such a great job in the Spurs game as well, too. He blocked Wemby at one point, which is pretty crazy. I don't know if Wemby was passing or whatever, but he just shoved that ball back in. He also had a dodgeball save where he jumped out of bounds, saved the ball, threw it off someone. He hit a big three in the third quarter when it was getting a little bit wild as well too, and so you just see that confidence oozing out of him. I think, you know, Jim and Grady were talking about it on air, is that he's just oozing with confidence, and that's so huge for him. And you mentioned that. I'm glad you brought that up. The competition, yeah, it's easier when you're guarding Gabe Vincent or running around out there. You're guarding a Jeremy Sohan, who's not really a threat from perimeter out there, where he gets to roam and make those big plays. But a couple get right games does a lot for his confidence. I think that's definitely something he can continue to carry over into these next really critical stretches of the month of December. So yeah, absolutely, I'm all with it. I think it's sustainable. He made a ton of winning plays, and all my notes on him from those two games are just like, great job, excellent, so good, no notes.
Yeah, and thinking kind of bigger picture, as the Wolves kind of, they lose Cat this offseason, and as we've gotten to know, we don't have to do a referendum on that or a referendum on Julius Randle right now, but like ultimately something I've been thinking of is like, the Wolves are going to need a second star to pair around Anthony Edwards. And Rudy Gobert is fantastic, but that's not the... Maybe they don't need... Like, Rudy is great, but like they need another offensive star, is how I should phrase it. Maybe that's Dillingham down the road. I think that's a possibility. But maybe Jaden, they can kind of build into that as well. I don't know if he has that type of game offensively or if he's always going to be kind of closer to what he is, but these type of performances the last couple games kind of make you think that that's in there somewhere.
Yeah, I do think so. And I think Jaden coming around is low-key one of the most important storylines for the Timberwolves moving forward, is what is Jaden going to become? You know, Jaden and Ant obviously have a ton of chemistry coming into, you know, the draft together. And, you know, Jaden obviously can be that too. He has two-way star potential. And I say that, you know, tongue-in-cheek, because obviously he hasn't quite gotten to that offensive end of it. Defensively, he's gotten there. But I think if he continues to push forward, the two of them, I mean, there's no reason why they couldn't reach the peaks of a Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum at some point into the future. You know, that's maybe a little bit wishful thinking, but I think that's not unrealistic either. So, yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, I think someone like Jaylen Brown is probably a bit higher of a ceiling than what Jaden has, but certainly that idea of two just fantastic wing players playing off each other is something those two can have. I remember like kind of comparisons to Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen last year when they were ripping off wins in November. Again, probably higher ceiling for both of them than we'd expect, but really good to see Jaden, especially defensively. I think him and Rudy have obviously been the biggest part of this defensive turnaround, and for everyone that wants quote-unquote identity for this team, I think it's back to pretty much what it was last year. They're going to strangle you defensively, and if they can cobble together enough points, they're going to start ripping off wins here.
100%. I agree.
Awesome. Topic number three. The Wolves finished a 9-game stretch all against Western Conference teams. They did so at 6-3. That 9-game stretch started off bumpy, losing to Houston and a brutal loss to Sacramento, where Anthony Edwards called out his entire team, basically, on that one, including himself. And then since then, they have won 6 out of their last 7 games, all against varying levels of opponent. But I'll at least say they're no tanking teams. All these teams, the Clippers, Lakers, Warriors, and kind of the surprising Spurs, are all teams that are not purposely trying to lose games at this point. You can quibble with their actual how good they all actually are. But yeah, the Wolves going 6-3, howl or foul. Did you think the Wolves would do better than that? Are they right back on pace to where you thought they'd be?
I would say how on that they did better than I thought they would do. And so my expectations going in, again, this was a Wolves team that was already, you know, they were hovering right around 500. They weren't looking too good at that point. And as you mentioned, you know, if they started off the trip, or they started off that stretch losing, you know, excruciating fashion in those two games where they took that late lead and then they just couldn't finish it out. At that point, I would have taken like a 500 record, gone 3-3 during, or sorry, like 4-5 or 5-4 during that time. I would have been like, all right, okay, like that's pretty good for me. You know, we can get out of here, split a couple, and then we can hopefully improve on it. So we finish off the season series against them. We'd be able to try to steal that tiebreaker against them, but we were able to win those. And I think that's almost kind of a, I don't know if it's the right usage, but a macrocosm of each Wolves game that we saw during that time, where it's like that roller coaster, like, oh my God, they look so good. Oh my God, they look so terrible. Wait, they're coming back. And then they lose. It was like similar, you know, they lose really bad and they nearly sweep California. And then, you know, they come back, they kind of find their defensive identity, but then they, they beat the Lakers and Spurs handily, but like you said, varying levels of competition with them where it's kind of like, all right, well, it was a good win, but, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done there. So at the end of the day, I think the biggest thing that came out of this, other than obviously the record and the wins, was that they came out of it with some answers. And the answers I mean is that they figured out that, okay, well, what is our identity? We're a defensive team. Like, yes, we were top number one defense last year, and then we traded Cat, who was a big part of it, for, you know, two more kind of offensively minded players. But, you know, they went back to it. They're like, you know what? No, we still have to rely on that defense. And that's what they found. So I think that's really big. And secondly, is that I think these wins are a lot more important than some of the other ones that we were kind of losing sleep about, like losing to the Raptors or losing to Portland back to back. Like, yes, those should have been wins, but those are not as important as, say, these wins later on because of how tight it is. I believe there's like four or five teams that are tied like with us, right? You know, six games back of the Thunder right now. And so every single game against teams around us in the standings is going to mean so much more than any of those, because when it comes down to the tiebreakers, we need those. And so, yes, a split with the Warriors, you know, not ideal, but it's also not the worst case scenario. And being able to get up on the Lakers and, you know, even helping, you know, pad that lead against the Kings, you know, I think we're still up 2-1 against them. So I think that's super, super important. And then we swept, you know, obviously, or not swept, but we won the Clippers season series as well, too, because we're only playing three times. I think we beat them twice. So yeah, Hal, I think they did better than I thought they do.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you, Hal, on that, just especially from after that Kings game. That was about certainly as low as a point as this season has seemed, even if the Kings and the Rockets weren't as bad as individual losses as those Portland and Toronto games you pointed out. But it was just like they were losing games in the exact same way. It was so clearly like in their heads more than anything like on the court necessarily. And I just thought like what Ant was able to do, and probably other leaders in that locker room able to kind of, at least for now, like cobble together some wins and get the team back to playing the way they should be. I just think that was an important stretch. Winning 6 out of 7, even if it is against not like the premier teams or whatever. I just think like getting those wins, and now it sets up like they're back within a few games of where they'd want to be. It's close. Like they 4.5 games separate 12 from 2. So it's. If they play like they did early in the season, they could drop out of the play-in altogether. And if they keep this 6 out of 7 stretch, the Thunder are probably out of reach, but like everything else is right in front of them. So it did surprise me that they were able to do it so quickly, but once they were able to find like the defense, like that's like the low hanging fruit. And now that they have the defense solidified, they're not giving up easy points in the bucket, in the paint. The Nas center minutes haven't been nearly as glaring as they were. They've kind of papered over everything that was going wrong. Now they can kind of focus on the offense, which, like I said, was coming into the year, that was like my biggest thing. Like I wasn't even concerned with, was the defense going to be first again? Was it going to be fifth? I was like, what can we see from like Ant playing with Rudy or playing with Julius/Cat, whoever was on the team at the time? Like, that's what's going to be like the next big stretch, because they're going to need to find like more consistent offense if they're going to win multiple playoff series.
Yeah, it feels like they still have questions on the table, but they have also found some answers, right? So I think that's there's good and bad from it. And I think that's, you know, the least we can ask for is that at least there was some progress towards something. So at least we know pretty clearly now what the next mission needs to be if they can continue to sustain one end of the court.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, topic number 4, the big emotional game on Thursday is against the New York Knicks, and Karl Anthony Towns returning to Target Center for the first time since the trade. I know, just thinking about it for myself, it's going to be a very weird one for a lot of people. I've been a Wolves fan longer before the Cat was on the team, but I think a lot of people, like, you get into college and you start following things a little bit more intently than you did back in high school or back when you were a kid. And so like I know my first time really like following the Timberwolves day to day was right around when Kat was on the team. Kat and I are the exact same age. So it'll be emotional seeing him back. It'll be weird. I think about like Ant playing down to lesser opponents will certainly not be an issue. I think he's going to want to, like you see in the playoffs, you saw him trying to give it to KD. I think there's going to be a little bit of that. Maybe it'll be too far the other way. Maybe from, we all know Kat can kind of get over whatever, but from Ant, maybe it'll be too much. But I'm really interested to see, like, just all the everything that happens with that game, because it's going to be, I'm glad the first one against the Wolves is here instead of, I guess they had the preseason game, but whatever. I'm glad the first one is here instead of in New York. But howl or foul, the Timberwolves defense will be able to slow down Karl Anthony Towns.
Oh man, I'm not ready for this game. to answer your question, will the Timberwolves defense be able to slow down Karl Anthony Towns? I'll say howl because, you know, Ant versus Cat, I mean, that's going to feed talking heads and their families for generations. I mean, you have the media darling in Anthony Edwards that everything he does, he seems like he can do no wrong. He's in all these commercials and all that for good reason. Now, meanwhile, you have Cat on the other side, which has been on the wrong end of the spectrum for a long time in the media's eyes, and also just social media, whatever the case is, and not for good reason. But, you know, that's just a fact, is that that's the way he was talked about. And I think that Even now with Kat in New York and the success they're having, I remember I saw an article maybe a month ago by The Ringer, or maybe weeks ago on The Ringer, about why Kat is like holding the Knicks back because of his defense or something like that, something crazy. So they're already railing on him over there. But as everyone, you know, most of y'all know, Kat is my guy. But I fear that the media will tear him apart if he doesn't contribute to like a big win. And Kat's a guy that's very aware of these things. And so I think there will be quite a bit of stray voltage, if I had to say so myself, at that game where he's going to be trying to do too much. We know Kat trying to do too much is not necessarily a recipe for a good outcome there. So I do think Kat may implode a little bit, and Ant's going to love it. If you remember Ant in the Olympics when he was playing against Rudy Gobert in the gold medal game, I mean, he was going at him. I mean, Ant didn't play a huge amount of minutes, but neither did Rudy, but it was enough time for Ant to hit a step back jumper, step back three, I think, on Rudy and talk a lot of trash to him. And so yeah, I'm expecting to see something like that. I mean, those two are brothers, though, so I don't see it getting wild. But I don't think that the Wolves defense can stop the rest of the team, but I think Kat will kind of stop himself as well too, and you know, that's part of it. If anything, I'm a little bit interested to see, if y'all remember the preseason game, Dante DiVincenzo was chirping at the Knicks sidelines with Coach Tibbs and also with Jalen Brunson's dad, Rick Brunson, as well too, a former Timberwolves assistant coach as well too. So, you know, I'm curious about that. That might get a little testy. I could see maybe a hard foul on by Josh Hart on Dante, or the other way around, and kind of see what happens there. And then Kat kind of runs in trying to be like the guy, and then Aunt Rudy are kind of like, oh, come on, man, relax, like Kat, you know, whatever. So, you know, I'm so interested to see what happens that game. But, you know, some may say that Leo's son's leaving the country so he doesn't have to watch that game and get that emotional roller coaster. But yeah, I think overall, how I think that Cat will be able to get slowed down, whether it's a Wolves defense or by himself.
Yeah, the narratives on Cat have already begun to frustrate me, because I can already see the pattern of where it's going, is that people that hadn't watched his game for years on the Wolves are now starting to watch a game and realize he's a very good player, especially on offense. Like, probably one of the best offensive players in the entire league, especially when he's playing center, because there's just so many teams just have no one to guard him. Traditional centers are too slow, and if you guard him with someone smaller and don't double, they're too small. And I already see, and he's played fantastic. I'm probably willing to say the best stretch of his career. I don't think that that's, but also, I don't think what he's doing in New York is all that. Is that like next? It's not a next level above what he was doing for many years on the Wolves. If you want to, it might be his best stretch of the career. I don't watch the Knicks intently, so I couldn't tell you, but looking at the numbers, that's probably true. But I just think people, like, he had a quote where, like, this frustrated me, where he said something like, I was a kid then, now I'm a man. And people shared it, and ESPN sent out a graphic with an image of Kat from last year, making it seem like that transition happened, like, because of the trade. No, that transition happened on the Wolves years ago. The Cat, basically pre-pandemic, was like, if you want to go back to like the Jimmy stuff, sure, that's like the boy Cat. And the man Cat was post-pandemic, and really probably even like post-Rudy trade, like the last couple of seasons with the Wolves. Like, that's what he's talking about there. And so, like, it's just a classic, like, they made it about the trade. It's not. That's not what he's referring to. And so I can already see, if the Knicks don't have the playoff run they probably think they're entitled to, or if Kat doesn't do this or that, and I'll certainly point to, I know you mentioned like Kat's, but like Kat at center is not to me a real, like a finals contending team defensively. It's like the classic conundrum of Kat is if you're playing him at power forward, the offense with a non-shooting center, if the Celtics had Kat with like Kristaps, oh my God, that'd be just the greatest team ever. But like playing Kat at forward with like a non-shooting center, the spacing is tough for him. And when you play him at center, he's just not like a drop back role big. And so he's certainly gotten much, much better at that. But like from like a true like Final Four playoff contender team, it's tough. So like all that to say, like I'm already tired of like the Kat narratives. And to put a bow on it, especially locally, where so many people always pointed to Kat for the reason why the Wolves didn't win when he was here. There's so many people, like just like basically more or less casual Wolves fans, where it was always Kat's fault. It was always that. And now all I hear is that the reason why they're not as good this year is because Kat's gone. It's like, well, where was this when the man was here? Because I would almost argue still now, but like certainly a year or two ago, Kat was like the second greatest player in the history of this franchise. And you shat on him every single chance he got. So all of that to say, and is that's like the baggage I come into this Knicks game with, where like you, Kat's probably my favorite Timberwolves player ever. And so I want him to succeed, and I've tried to root for the Knicks just because it's fun to have an Eastern Conference team. But like just some of that narrative stuff has prevented me to do that. And so I don't know who, I don't know where to, I mean, I hope they lose obviously, but yeah, to go back to the X's and O's after that, well, I'll give you a chance to respond to all of that.
Yeah. I mean, I've written articles about Kat getting an unfair shake and, you know, how people who really have seen him behind the scenes and have gotten to meet him and have seen what he does both on and off the court see that like he is just a great person. He's a great basketball player and he deserves so much more. And so, yeah, part of me, I agree with you. I would love to see him like score 82 points and beat the Timberwolves. Okay. Like, yes, I know we'll never be able to hear the end of it, but that would do so much for him. I think not that I think he wants to stick it to Minnesota because he's just a great guy where it's like, he still loves Minnesota. I'm like confident that he will forever have a home here, that he'll still be able to come. He'll still be coming back. And so, you know, I don't think it's in his DNA to do that. Oh, revenge narrative, like, you know, whatever. Now he may want to prove it to, you know, the talking heads, but not necessarily to like in your face, Minnesota. I guarantee you if the Knicks win a championship, he'll be the very first one to, you know, as cringe as the kids might say it is, but he can say, this is for everyone, Minnesota, right? Like just like Kevin Garnett, like he will kind of follow that footstep. So yeah, I do root for him individually. I'm not rooting for the Knicks for a number of reasons, but yeah, I think it's quite interesting. I will be interested to see like what the media will say. I know that I will for sure cry like a baby when I see his video highlight, you know, his little montage that they're gonna put together for him. That I'm gonna be in Mexico dabbing my tears up watching the game from my phone. But yeah, it's gonna be interesting, emotional, and you'll be there on hand, right? You'll be attending that game, or at least as a fan.
Yep, going as a fan, taking the wife. She's a big cat person too, so yeah, we're looking forward to it. Leo, are you a big Star Wars guy, or at least seen the original movies?
I've seen enough of it.
Yeah, so do you know at the end of Episode 6, they blow up the second Death Star, they're all celebrating, and the Force ghosts of, like, yeah. Yeah, so, like, if the Wolves ever win a title, like, that's, like, the meme where it'll be, like, the Force right. ghost of KG, Kat, and I don't know whoever the Yoda replacement will be. Like that. Like that's
Malik Steely. All right, now I'm getting too sad now.
Like that. That's what I imagine. Like that'll be I'll put it together. Even I'm not good at Photoshop or video editing, but even if it's just a crude like Photoshop of a colored face over a blue ghost, but whatever. But yeah, to switch gears back to the actual topic at hand. I do think Howell and the Wolves being able to stop, slow down a Kat a certain extent, just they have the defense to do it. I don't think they'll go with this alignment, but if you really wanted to employ the strategy that so many did against Kat when he was here, is you'd guard him with Randall and have Rudy lurk or double with another guard. The problem with that is I don't really know who Rudy guards then. I mean, would you be comfortable putting him on like Josh Hart? I don't know. But like, that's like if you wanted to like do the thing that everyone did against Cat and frazzle him, that may be the way to do it. But the Knicks do have a lot of good players around Cat, so maybe they have a better alignment to have him just make an easy pass out to some open people. But even if it's Gobert guarding him, I like thinking about the ways Cat would hurt Gobert in the past. It would just be like chucking threes, that'll probably happen again. And then I think Rudy is quick enough to like keep up with like the blow bys that Cat likes to do. Him and Brunson, Cat and Brunson have been like the best pick and roll pairing in the league. So that might be the, that'll be where it'll be interesting to watch. If it's like Cat one-on-one, I think the Wolves will do really well. But if Brunson and Cat are running pick and rolls and Cat is popping out, Rudy's scrambling, I think that'll be like where they attack the Wolves.
Yeah, I hope Nickeil Alexander-Walker and Jaden McDaniels watch some of that NBA Cup semifinals Dyson Daniel tape on how they slowed Jalen Brunson down, because they really did a great job on him. But I will say this, Ryan, I mean, I do agree with the concept of putting Julius Randle like a heavy, you know, lower to the ground kind of defender on Cat. But I mean, just picture the narrative that we're to paint here. One of the best offensive players who, you know, has ever played in a Timberwolves uniform is playing against one-on-one against a Julius Randle player who is much maligned for his lack of defense. And so in theory, in a vacuum, I'm a little bit scared of that. I feel like Cat's either going to score 80 points or he's going to foul out in 2 minutes and there's no in-between. It's going to be interesting in a lot of angles, not just from storyline, but yeah, the X's and O's I think will be really, really interesting, because I think both teams lean really heavy on their top, you know, 6-7 or, you know, in our case, 8 players. And so there's going to be a lot of heavy... Yeah, exactly. So I think this may be an interesting little rivalry to, you know, going forward, but you know, obviously hopefully we meet them in the NBA finals, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I get your point with Randle, but like that's what Utah did. Utah guarding right. him with like Bojan. Like that's not necessarily like a better maybe it's a better like alignment for the non-Rudy minutes, like when they have Nas they'd probably still stick with Nas out there cuz Nas is quick, but like have Nas and Rudy or Nas and Julius double, or that'll be the alignment there.
Ryan, how many minutes do you think will go by of game action until we see social media going wild about the whistle that Cat's getting versus what he didn't get with us?
I'd do it 10 games ago. Like,
I know, right? Jesus. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, again, I don't watch all the Knicks games, so it's impossible to, I think like, stuff like that, like I will go to my grave saying Cat got just a terrible whistle. I think Jaden gets a similar whistle, not necessarily on shooting fouls, but like some of those touch fouls. Jaden gets a lot of that, and I know like Nuggets fans feel like Jokic gets hacked, and I'm not sure they're wrong. Like so, but like to judge officiating based on like basically only watching the Knicks in the last few minutes of close games, like probably not fair. But I agree with you that it just seeing his free throw number spike is a little annoying, especially
triggering.
Like
it's triggering.
You get the Twitter highlights of him drawing a blocking foul. That's like that was a charge when he was here.
Gosh,
I don't know about that.
I know. Anyways,
we can move on to Apex Alpha. My Apex Alpha candidate is Rudy Gobert. To me, he's back to playing that defensive player of the year level, and he is on the sportsbooks 30-1 to win defensive player of the year, which is just. That's just way too far. Like, maybe that, I mean, that's just Vegas. I kind of agree with Vegas in the sense of voters are going to look for any reason not to give it to Rudy. And also, like, watching Wemby, holy cow. Like, I'm not sure I have a problem with Wemby winning Defensive Player of the Year over Rudy, because that is, I mean, how is he not going to win it every single year? Like, they just.
That Mike Connolly block, that reverse layup block that he got was insane.
The Wolves like just couldn't go in the paint, and I'm sure that's what a lot of people think about Rudy. But like, I was looking at some of like the people in between Rudy and Wemby, and I'm like Jaren Jackson. Again, I don't watch every single Memphis game, but like, I just think Rudy's so much better defender than everyone, but Wemby. But I understand what the voters do. Also looking at voters, like Nickeil should be in the Sixth Man of the Year. At least on the voting ballot, I was surprised kept scrolling, couldn't find him. So, a theoretical, like, it's not even on the book. So, if you want value, maybe try to get the book to offer you some sort of Nikhil for six man prop. But yeah, I just think Rudy and Aframich and Jaden are such a big part of what the Wolves do defensively. And thinking about like Davis has always felt like, why did I win Defensive Player of the Year? And I think a good example of that were games like last night, or games like when he like Jokic just absolutely torches him. Like, I mean, Jokic torches everyone, and he torches Gobert, as we saw in the playoffs. But like, I don't know, Rudy doesn't do what AD did, just kind of being checked out of the game. So yeah, Rudy's my apex alpha. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, big ups to Rudy for sure. I mean, I do want to kind of second that, that he's been a huge reason the Wolves found their identity again, right, as a defensive team. And so props to him, because there was that, again, right after that Raptors game where it was like, I can't believe we have Rudy Gobert on this roster and we traded Kat, not him, right, with the whole Julius Randle didn't pass to him, you know, type deal or whatever that case was. So, yeah, big ups to Rudy.
Let me interject on that trade point. Yeah. They didn't trade Kat over Gobert because they thought that Gobert's better. They did it because Kat makes $60 million next year.
Right.
And I would probably agree with you. You can argue like that's a dumb reason to do that, but like, it's just, like, that's a disingenuous argument, which you're not making. I've seen other people make.
Sure.
But like, and I get it emotionally. I understand the feeling, but like, looking at the facts, the reason they traded Towns was because they were going to be so far into the, I see all your trade machine proposals and every single one of them is not a legal trade. Some of you do it like you just guilty. Don't know the rules, and that's fine, but like I see your two for ones. You the Wolves cannot aggregate players in a trade. I see like the Wolves trading away 30 and getting 31 back. The Wolves cannot take a single dollar more back, like, and so I just like I want people to connect those dots when they're on the trading machine. They can't any Randall trade you do, it's going to be very hard to do because of the second apron rules. And if you're also the person that gets frustrated at that and them trading away Kat, well, the reason, a big reason, and maybe it's just because the owners are cheap. I wouldn't rule that out. But a big reason is because these second apron rules are so restrictive. And if they got to a point, like if they were 14-11 with Kat, you might feel like they're up a creek without a paddle because they just would have very little way to get out of it. So, sorry to hinge on that one little thing wanted to like clear that out. But who is your Apex Alpha?
Yeah, speaking of guys that we would not trade, my Apex Alpha is Jaden McDaniels. We talked about him earlier. That's an easy answer. So, you know, I went with him. I mean, I feel like he really raises the ceiling of the Wolves when he's playing well. When he plays well, Wolves often rarely lose. I mean, you look at the numbers from this season alone. I mean, I know there's a lot in the past, but this season, the Wolves are 7-2 when he makes at least 2 3-pointers. The Wolves are 7-1 when he shoots at least 55% or above. The Wolves are 8-1 when he commits 2 fouls or less. So it's like the more time you get Jaden, that means the more productive Jaden you get, which means the better chance you're going to win that game. And so, yeah, it's hard to go with anyone else for me other than Jaden McDaniels, because he is someone that I believe that you know, as much as people talk about, oh, well, the Wolves, yeah, they might make, you know, the first round, they might creep in the second round, but they're not contenders. But if Jaden, as we talked about earlier, he continues playing with this intensity and it shows up in the box score, whether or not it shows up in the box score. But him playing at this level makes them, in my opinion, a contender to win the West at the very least, you know, if he's playing this good. So, you know, I love what I'm getting from Jaden McDaniels out there. I hope this continues. Now, obviously, you know, there'll be some ebbs and flows, but yeah, I'm so impressed by what he's been doing recently.
Yeah, and Finch always talks about like McDaniels being like the barometer of the offense. When it's going good, Jaden's going good. So it was interesting to see on two nights that the offense was not going good, Jaden was able to like get going and score some points. So that's like an interesting thing there. Hopefully Jaden can kind of bring them out of their offensive ruts that they've too often have. But we'll move on to Prey of the Week. Leah, who did the Wolves make their prey this week?
It is our buddy D'Angelo Russell. Good old D'Lo, as we mentioned earlier. He had a decent game when he played the Wolves 2 games ago. So not this last week, but the week before when they started on that little West Coast trip. And I think he had like 20 points, almost double-double. But this game, not quite. Came off the bench and you thought, well, you know, D'Lo might be due for a big game. LeBron's out. You know, yeah, they're going to bring him off the bench, but he's probably going to play a lot of minutes. Well, he picked up like 3 fouls in the first couple minutes that he was in there in the first half. And he got benched. And when he came, he was 0-for-6 later on, late in the game. I think when he came back in the third quarter, he missed a three, but then he drilled a three and they hit a layup. And we're like, uh-oh, is this a D'Lo explosion we're about to get that we've seen for a couple of years here at Target Center? But when the game was really hanging in the balance, the Lakers making one that last push in the fourth quarter, he went 0-for-6. And a number of those were wide open looks as well, too. And so, as much as we like to pile on him and that infamous quote that he had when he got traded to the Lakers, where he said, honestly, I felt like I was held back when talking about Minnesota. But the fact of the matter is that he doesn't play a winning style of basketball. And I think Lakers fans know this. We know this. A lot of other teams have had him before. I mean, even the Nets, they knew they were at best a first-round team when they were in that fun Kenny Atkinson Nets days back there with Jared Allen. But it's interesting because I feel like so many people really equate Julius Randle to like, oh man, he's just a forward version of D'Lo. And I get it. Like, he pounds a rock, he shoots mid-range jumpers, he's hot and cold. So I get that part of it. But I mean, come on, we're talking about a guy that made all NBA multiple times. He's a multiple time All-Star. D'Lo, I think, was an injury replacement 1 year. And Julius Randle literally hoisted the Knicks. Yes, they were in the East, but he hoisted them to multiple playoff berths. And I think D'Lo, they made that one playoff berth that 1 year, but that was it. So I think that, the proof is in the pudding that Julius Randle is a better player than D'Angelo Russell. Again, I'm not saying Julius Randle is a superstar, but he's not a D'Lo. And we saw that, especially in that last game against the Lakers.
Yeah, I saw like a TikTok clip or YouTube short or whatever the heck it was. Like, it was D'Lo at the end of or toward the end of that game on Friday. It was like, D'Lo for three, not close. Back out. This is the Lakers broadcast. Back out. D'Lo for three, not close. And it just kind of seems like, they went to the Western Conference Finals that year. The Lakers traded for them. So, I mean, good for them. I do wonder, like, just kind of talking with one of the guys that covers the Lakers, like, the sliding doors of what if they had just traded for Mike instead of for D'Lo? I don't remember who they sent out in that trade, but they certainly could have taken back Mike if they wanted him to. I just wonder if maybe it probably doesn't matter. The Nuggets were probably way better than they were, and Mike wasn't gonna raise their ceiling from where they're at now. So maybe it doesn't matter. That obviously the main sliding doors with the Lakers of the past couple of years is the Westbrook trade. But yeah, D'Lo, I think, has worn out his welcome. I'm not sure. I think they thought they could have traded him again at some point by they've been re-signing him here. And I'm guessing they haven't been able to. But yeah, my prayer of the week is kind of on a similar vein. Basically, the entire Lakers offense, twice now they've held the Lakers to 87 points or less, first of which the lowest of the season, 80 points by anyone, unless that's been surpassed in the last week. They just looked like they didn't want to be there at Target Center thinking about the Lakers. Like, they just looked, I just thought, like, the whole game, I was kind of tweeting out some snarky things like, the Wolves will play terrible. They've done this bad. They've done that bad. And they're up 7. It was just like, no matter how poorly the Wolves play, the Lakers are just giving the ball right back. And like, before the game, I sat in on JJ Redick's presser. And I don't know if he's just like always like this or if he doesn't like the specific media members that were there. But like, he was just like not in a good mood. He was asked like if he knew when LeBron was coming back, and he just had a one word answer, no, which is weird to me considering he played yesterday. Like, you had no inkling of that, or you had no, like, you couldn't even like waffle and be like, he might come back, he might not, we're giving him his time, you're giving him this or that. Like, that's just weird. And then someone asked about Bronny had a 30 point game in the G League, and he immediately snapped back about the report that Bronny wasn't going to play road games, and he said that was never a plan for ours. And it was just like, I don't know, I didn't think the questions were all that contentious, and even if they were, I found it interesting that he was so willing to just like answer it with the most snark possible. I don't know, just my 2 cents on the Lakers is the vibes aren't great, but also they just went out and beat Memphis the other night, so what do I know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how many times I have to say this, whether it's on this pod or in real life or on Blue Sky or any social media or at work, but I hate the Lakers. I hate the Lakers. I hate that my wife likes the Lakers, okay? I hate everything about the Lakers. Now, that being said, it's funny because, if any of the Laker apologists were like, oh, yeah, well, they didn't have LeBron, it's like, do you remember what happened when LeBron played the Timberwolves the last game before that? That was like the worst I've ever seen him. Yeah, it was sad. And I like LeBron James, okay? I'll say that much. But So to say that, oh, well, they lost because they have LeBron, like, no, I don't think that's it. Like, there's some serious issues there. And I have seen enough JJ Redick post-game press conferences, because I will hate watch those after the Lakers lose, just to be like, all right, what's he got today? Because it's so funny seeing, I'm surrounded by Lakers fans here in SoCal. And it's just so funny early in the season when they were like, we did it. All it was the coach. We got rid of Darvin Ham, JJ Redick, and like, that's straightforward, that championship, baby. And then now they're like, why did we hire this guy? He has like no professional experience. It's just so funny watching him turn so quickly. And so, yeah, JJ has always been a little bit, interestingly enough, contentious when he's doing his post-game presser, especially when they lose. And I get it. Yeah, I mean, who's happy to do it when they lose? But yeah, he's, as someone that seems to be like so media savvy, he seems to really have a distaste for doing that. And I'm like, licking up every like little drop of it right now because it's so delicious. Well, and so yeah, there's, yeah, go ahead.
The presser I was at was before the game.
Oh, but,
so yeah, it even, that's why I found it so interesting. It's like, you haven't even lost yet. What's going on?
He knew what was coming.
Probably.
I mean, they turned the ball over 11 times in the first quarter. That's crazy. That makes the Wolves look like we were freaking like a team run by five Mike Conleys out there on the floor. I mean, 11 turnovers in the first, that's insane. And like, I understand no LeBron, but you're telling me that, I mean, that's a turnover a minute there, basically. That's wild. That's wild. I loved it. I loved every second.
That game was brutal. But to kind of close this out, we can kind of shift to kind of looking at the Western Conference as a whole. We kind of did that a little bit earlier, but the Wolves currently sit at tied for fifth. We're really tied for sixth. Denver has a slight win percentage despite being six games back. They have a slight win percentage boost. We'll see if they, when you guys are listening to this, they'll either have won or lost against Leo's Kings out there. So they'll either be a half game up or half back. But the Wolves are three back in Memphis, two and a half back of Houston and Dallas. There's a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams, Nuggets, Suns, Wolves, Warriors, Clippers, and Lakers, all within a half game of each other. And then the Spurs and Kings are just a game back. So it is, like I said, it is all in front of them, or it could all tumble. The Wolves could, maybe not realistically, but could potentially finish 12th, and they could finish as high as 2nd. Like, all of that is in front of them. My two cents is, like, the group, most of the group, they're kind of tied with. Like, looking at the teams tied or below them, I feel pretty good about them finishing above them, the standings, above the Kings, Spurs, Lakers, Clippers, Warriors. Those ones. And then I think like the Suns and Nuggets are probably toss up. Nuggets have an easy schedule, but they have been not impressive. So that's kind of a toss up. If the Suns are healthy, maybe they can keep up with the Wolves. If they're not, it's going to be tough. And then, so if they were to get in front of all those teams, that put them at fifth. And then, like, the next group of teams that have the buffer are Memphis, Houston, and Dallas. I'm not even thinking about OKC. I just think they're going to run away with the West, both because they have a six-game buffer and because I just think regular season-wise and probably playoff-wise, they're just so clearly the best team. But, Leo, what do you think? What would you say is, like, I would probably, like, their ceiling is probably, like, a 3 seed, maybe 2 seed. I think Dallas will probably end up 2. But, like, I would probably say, like, 4 or 5 seed is where I would expect them to finish. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think no one's going to be surpassing the Thunder. I mean, you mentioned a bunch of reasons. They also have one of their best players that's still on the comeback from an injury in Chet Holmgren, right? So I don't think the Thunder are going anywhere at all the way they're playing, their depth. I mean, they're not, as you can see, I mean, they're not a one injury away from falling down the standings like the Suns are, right? So
they've had that injury to Chet, and they're still just ripping off wins.
They started without Isaiah Hartenstein as well, too. So it's like, you know, they've had injuries. And, you know, Caruso's been banged up here or there, but, I mean, he's finally back as well, too. So, yeah, so no one's catching OKC. So they're for sure first. So we won't be finishing there. But, you know, with Memphis and Dallas, they do have, according to Tankathon, a tougher strength of schedule left than us as well too. So I do think that will play a part in it as well. They have a little bit of a cushion, but I think that's possible that we might catch one of them. Again, it could all turn upside down within, you know, a week or two. And I think that, you know, they may have hit their ceiling with their main pieces as well too. I mean, think about Phoenix. You talked about their health. I mean, are you banking on Kevin Durant being healthy? Are you banking on Bradley Beal, who I own in two fantasy leagues, being healthy? I don't have faith in that. And so, yeah, they are probably a little bit better of a team than they were last year. Continuity, adding Tyus Jones is huge, but Yusuf Nurkic has looked like a complete shell of himself out there for the most part. He's had a couple of good games, but he's been terrible mostly for the Suns right now. So, yeah, I do think that if I had to bet, I'd say they finished closer to about the 4 seed. you know, like you said, four or five seems pretty reasonable. I think that two or three of the teams, you know, that I mentioned earlier that will be able to beat them, probably not all three of those between Memphis, Dallas, and Phoenix, but yeah, anything can happen, though. So I'm not going to go and say that I, you know, when it's this close, it's really hard to say anything with any type of certainty going in there. But it's really exciting, though, because every night it's like it matters now. Like every game, like not only does it matter when you're looking at the playoffs for the Wolves, but I mean, you think about, well, what's going to be happening even over in the East. I know it's not as close, but like I was watching the Pistons game today, and I know that we have the first round pick. The better the Pistons do, the more likely we get their pick. And they beat the Heat in overtime. It was a really wild game, and that was a lot of fun.
I turned that off. So, I was watching that. They went down like 8, and I turned it off and saw that they won. It's like, overtime,
yeah. It was a wild game. It was like the best game of the year if you like wild, crappy basketball. It was pretty funny, but all that to say is that there's been a lot of really fun NBA basketball to watch on both ends of it right now. And so, you know, watching teams like the Philadelphia 76ers struggle right now. I mean, that's I love watching that. You know, so there's a lot of fun mm-hmm. things to watch out there right now. But yeah, the West is going to be wild. I feel like every week we pod, you know, we could be on either end of the spectrum right now.
Yeah, the East is a little bit more settled because like, I think that the current top six, unless the Heat trade Jimmy, like I would expect, even if you just like take the top five, I would expect that Cleveland, Boston, New York, Orlando, Milwaukee.
Sure.
I'm pretty confident those would be your top five. If you look at the top five of the West, I would not be nearly as confident.
Sure.
Not that any of those teams are bad, but like
top five minus one, right?
Yeah. But let's head to our two words. My two words, you've kind of already talked about it, are Cat reunion. He was the most important Timberwolves player of the past 20 years. And for now, that's still true. Anthony Edwards will surpass him in that soon enough. But even if you cut off 20 years from, I kind of probably got to go 19 years to cut off 2004. But basically from 2005 to 2024, I would say Karl-Anthony Towns was the most important Timberwolves player. And like I just continue to think like so much of what they've done is because of Cat. I don't think they certainly don't make the Western Conference Finals last year without Cat. And even if you like take Cat off, like quote unquote take Cat off of this roster, and you lose, like you just don't have Julius and Randle, and you replace them with whatever money they would have spent. Like I just don't think they're not nearly as good of a team. So much of what like they built was because Cat never requested a trade when he had plenty of reason to do so.
Every reason.
Through the Gerson era, through the Ryan Saunders hiring and firing, like so much of what they have now is because of Cat. I shudder to think where they would have been if they had to have traded Cat like pre-pandemic or like the year or two after the Jimmy stuff. I just think they would have languished, like they would have gone right back into hiding in like from the post KG years. So from that sense, I'm excited to see Cat play basketball again. I'm hoping for like Cat has a 25 point night, solid, not great, but just fine, and the Wolves win. Like that's what we're hoping for. We don't need a Cat 40 burger. We don't need a Cat 9 pointer or whatever.
Yeah, I'd like to see a Cat 100 points and Timberwolves 101 points. Anthony Edwards hits Rudy Gobert hits a game winning three. That's what I'd like to see right there. Now, I think a Cat reunion. That's nice, and I really hope I'm pretty confident that the Wolves fans in attendance will give him, you know, the standing round of applause that he deserves, and that gives him a warm welcome. I mean, he's been nothing but, as we mentioned earlier, just super representative of Minnesota, always talked up Minnesota, always tried to recruit guys to Minnesota, whether they were good or not.
Shout out D'Lo.
Shout out D'Lo. But yeah, I mean, I do agree. I mean, he was probably the most important player, and this time he really carried that torch. And someone had to carry it. It could have been, you know, it could have been Trevion Graham carrying that torch throughout the years. It could have been Jarrett Culver carrying that torch and trying to hope for them.
And
it could have been Wiggins, right? Yeah. And instead, you know, it was Cat, and he was productive while he was here. And, you know, maybe didn't come with all the wins that he deserved to, but he also deserved a lot better teams when he was here as well, too. So, yeah, that's a great one. I like that, Ryan. My two words are lunch pail. The schedule does not get much easier. We talked much about how important that 9-game stretch against Western Conference, you know, competitors was, but they're going to have 8 games in a row coming up where all teams are 500 or better right now. Their only quote unquote maybe easy game would be the Hawks, who are much improved and they're playing really hard right now. You know, Jalen Johnson is playing really great. Trey's kind of found his second win in his career in Atlanta over there. So you know, the Wolves have been bringing the lunch pails, especially with their defense. They've hunkered down. They came to work with their hard hats on every day. And you know, they've taken it to the court, and I think that they need to continue having that mindset moving forward. They can't lose focus right now, because again, as we mentioned just in that last bit of playtime, that everything is so close right now. So they have to keep churning out these what I call professional wins, where it might not be pretty, they might not be scoring a ton of points, you know, it might get a little scary there in the fourth quarter despite leading a lot, but they still finish it out with a win. And so they really, really need that in this upcoming 8-game stretch against, you know, teams 500 or better.
Yeah, what do we think they can go? I mean, it's tough. 4-4 might not be the worst thing in the world. I think 5-3 would probably be what you'd hope for.
Yeah, yeah. I think so as well, too. I mean, there's some games against, you know, the Thunder. I think there's one or two against the Celtics, or at least one against the Celtics upcoming as well, too. At the end of that stretch, it's like Thunder and then Celtics. And so that's going to be a really tough stretch right there. And so, you know, yeah, I think anything above 500, I'd be happy with. But, you know, if they're playing the brand of basketball they're playing right now, there's no reason they can't be competitive in every game right now.
Yeah, and fair or not, so much of their issues early on were like playing bad teams and playing down to their level. Well, right. I don't think there's not much of that. The only team, or there are two teams you could quote-unquote play down to are at Atlanta, and I don't think Anthony Edwards is playing down in Atlanta. That's hometown, and they just beat the Spurs, so I guess I would expect them to beat them back home. But so yeah, if you win those two and you go 3-3 in the other six, then there's your 5-3. So that's probably the blueprint. Then you kind of get more in January and February with the schedule. It's not going to lighten up. You're not going to find, we're not in the East, we're not going to find like this easy pocket of schedule. But at the very least, this recent, everyone's healthy. They've had plenty of time off, and now through the end of the year, they got a game every other day. And I think that's the rhythm players generally like.
Right. Yeah. So it'll be an interesting stretch here, I think, as we close out, head into 2025. And I'm really excited because, again, these are all, every game is meaningful right now. There's no like, that one's just kind of a throwaway game. And so it's also important, obviously, I think, for us as fans, too, to, you know, not lose our heads over, you know, hey, they get crushed by the Knicks by 30 points. Like, oh my gosh, you know, it's over, you know, or they lose a close game to the Dennis Schroeder Golden State Warriors and be like, oh man, like, you know, we're never going to be able to get over the hump. It's like, you know, there's a lot of games, and that's the beauty of the NBA. And I think, you know, gone are going to be these long breaks that we've had recently where they're going to have 4 days off in between. So they'll really be, you know, put to the test, and, you know, we'll see what they're made of.
Exactly. Well, yeah, next pod we'll do will be Friday, either come out Friday night or Saturday morning. Me and Travis Singleton, the senior reporter, will cover everything that happens in that reunion with Kat. And then next week we'll schedule with Christmas is kind of up in the air, but try to get out at least one pod for you guys, kind of breaking down maybe that Dallas Christmas game. Wolves haven't played on Christmas in a while, but they play in Dallas. So that'll be fun. Leo, you got anything else?
No. Let's just go out there, enjoy some Wolves basketball, enjoy time with your family, enjoy the holidays, everyone. Yeah, I will be out for the next week, but I'll be back 2 weeks from now, hopefully in one piece and with a new Juan Toscano-Anderson jersey to boot. But yeah, looking forward to it.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. Have a good night.
Get home, drive safe.